The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get concerned when people talk about teaching the Bible in public schools. After all, this violates our Constitution's mandate of separation between church and state. Well, my friend, if separation between church and state has been keeping you up at nights, let me put your mind at ease. Nowhere in our Constitution will you find the phrase separation between church and state. It's not there. We do have a First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's it. That's what all the bugaboo is about. It means we have no national church that people are obligated to attend or believe in. They can go to church anywhere they want. They don't have to go to church at all. They don't have to believe in God if they don't want to. It does not mean that one is only allowed to talk about the Bible within the boundaries of a church building, and that he has to zip his lips the moment he walks outside. When people try to tell us what we can or cannot say in public schools or anywhere else in the public arena, it sounds an awful lot like prohibiting the free exercise of religion thereof, doesn't it? Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Bob, the Supreme Court has since reinterpreted that law, starting with the landmark decision of 1947, Everson versus the Board of Education. Once again, my friend, you need not concern yourself, because despite that dumb, unconstitutional Everson ruling, nowhere in the Constitution is the Supreme Court given the job of interpreting our Constitution. That was a precedent that began with Marbury versus Madison. Now, granted, the job of the court is to enforce our Constitution and perhaps apply our Constitution when a questionable law comes up. And yes, that may be all that some people mean when they say interpret. But as for legislating from the bench, as for this idea that the rest of us cannot understand what our ruling document says and we need these nine brilliant minds to explain its hidden meaning, well, that's mythology. Anyway, back to the subject of the Bible in public schools. We have a special guest today who's going to discuss this provocative subject. And here to introduce our guest is this week's co-host, Kevin Conover. Kevin, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bob. I'm really excited about this show. It's a very hot topic. And all over our country, states are right now having this discussion and kind of battling it out, whether it's in the courts or in the legislatures or whatever. And I'm really excited about our guest today. His name is Eric Buer, and he is the founder and president of Gateways to Better Education. He has a lot of experience and a lot of credentials when it comes to this issue. He has been a public school teacher, and his work has been featured on the cover of Focus on the Family magazine, Breakpoint magazine with Chuck Colson. He's written articles for Teachers in Focus, Christian Parenting Insight, the American Family Association. He's been endorsed by D. James Kennedy, Rabbi Daniel Lapin, and Josh McDowell. He's been on the Coral Ridge Hour. Just very, very well-credentialed. Mike Huckabee has endorsed him. And so I'm excited to introduce Eric Buer. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. And I'm excited to hear the insight you have to offer, as you know, there's court cases all around the country we've heard about where people are battling over what's allowed and what's not allowed in the classroom. And I think a lot of public school teachers, Christian teachers, parents, administrators are confused about that. And often that confusion leads to silence. And so what it seems to be is happening is God is being pushed continually out of the classroom and out of the public schools. Would you say that's been your experience also?
It has. The sad thing is there's this kind of just an unspoken, oftentimes, assumption that our public schools need to be religion-free zones. God is not to be discussed. Certainly somebody talking about their faith is really not that good. We might on occasion tolerate it, but we certainly won't encourage it.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, it couldn't be further from the truth. The reality is the courts have not said you can't have religious expression in the public schools. In fact, in a case called Lynch versus Donnelly, the Supreme Court assumes that students are singing religious Christmas carols, as they said in the ruling, in the public schools. You've got other cases, the Abington versus Shemp case, where the Supreme Court actually endorsed teaching and reading the Bible in public school, not as a devotional means, but as an academic means.
Eric, how come nobody seems to know this? It seems like people go back to the Everson case as if that settled the whole thing. Why is there so much ignorance? Because I've met teachers, I've met Christian principals who really think they have to tread lightly with this, and they're being very sincere.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the massive ignorance on the topic. It's just the media has pounded this. Groups like the ACLU and the Freedom From Religion Foundation have pounded this issue to where people assume that it's true. We recently did a research report on every state's academic standards, looking for where the Bible and Christianity can be taught. And what we found was that California actually is the best. California is the most robust when it comes to its academic standards in teaching about the Bible.
Wow. I would never have associated California with the Bible in a million years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's these standards, and they're not from 1950. These standards came out in 1998. They were updated in 2005.
They came out in 1998?
Yes.
That is amazing.
If you went to the California Department of Education's website, you could download their entire history, social studies framework and standards. And for instance, in the sixth grade, and this is the current standard, so that this year, every sixth grader should be learning this. Here's what the standard says. They are to note the origins of Christianity in the Jewish messianic prophecies, the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth as described in the New Testament. That means they'd have to read it. And the contribution of St. Paul the Apostle to the definition and spread of Christian beliefs. And then in parentheses they put, in case the teachers don't know what those beliefs are, for example, belief in the Trinity, resurrection, and salvation.
And they don't have to add in there that Paul was really gay and God is really gay or anything like that?
Just straightforward, easy to understand what the Christian beliefs are, and you do that by reading the primary documentation.
Okay, now how many schools in California would you say are actually doing that, though?
Few. In fact, I have talked personally to three sixth-grade teachers who are Christians who had no idea that was even in the system.
Yeah, this is the best-kept secret in the world. How can we get the word out here better?
Well, and in fact, we have this report up on our website. It's if they go to just the initials for Gateways to Better Education, so gtbe.org/report, they can see this report. And when it comes to the Old Testament, here's what the standards begin with. It says, one of the principal roots of Western civilization can be found in the enduring contributions of the ancient Hebrews to Western ethical and religious thought and literature, most notably by the Old Testament. To understand these traditions, students should read and discuss biblical literature that is part of the literary heritage and ethical teachings of Western civilization. Then they give examples. They say, for example, stories about the creation, Noah, the Tower of Babel, Abraham, the Exodus, the Ten Commandments, Ruth and Naomi, David, Daniel and the Lion's Den, selections from the Psalms and Proverbs, and the Hebrew people's concept of wisdom, righteousness, law, and justice.
Wow, Eric, you're kind of blowing my mind here, and I'm sure that anybody else who's listening here is kind of astonished. What would you say to the person who says, "Oh, this is maybe it says that in the California, you know, code, but if you actually tried to do this, you would just get slammed. You know, you'd get all kinds of protests and arguments."
Well, yeah, wouldn't the ACLU sue somebody anyway over this?
Well, you know, the problem is that oftentimes teachers, A, they either don't know that it's there, or B, then they try to teach it, and they teach it in more of an evangelistic way or a devotional way than in a more objective academic way.
Right. And if I'm hearing you correctly, it's getting through because it's history. It's not that they're saying you should be of that religion. The contribution to Western civilization and history is the way that
exactly.
got through.
Yeah. No altar calls to the chalkboard.
Yeah.
But if this message has warmed your heart, come talk to one of our ushers.
Teachers are so afraid that they're so hesitant to even touch this.
And doesn't the ACLU scare them off usually before they even make it to court? Isn't it true that the few times people go to court with them, they've been known to win? I mean, at least a good deal of the time?
Actually, you know, one of the best-kept secrets is the ACLU loses most of the time, but they trumpet their victories, and frankly, it's just that school districts don't want lawsuits. They don't want the expense of lawsuits.
So their bark is bigger than their bite, the ACLU.
The mere threat will oftentimes cause a school district to back down. But here's an interesting little fact, again, people don't realize. Back in 1995, the ACLU signed on to a coalition statement from a number of educational and legal organizations in which they said that it is both defensible and desirable for schools to teach objectively about the role of religion in history and society. So there's a myth out there that says, oh, if you do this, the ACLU will sue you. What I find is, most of these groups, like right now, the one you're always reading about in the newspaper is the Freedom From Religion.
Oh, yeah, I know them very
well.
Well,
what I find is they go after what I call the low-hanging fruit. You know, somebody, a teacher prays with the students. Somebody has an assembly and they give an appeal to accept the gospel. A coach prays with his players. You know, we had a case a school district in Oklahoma was putting up Ten Commandment plaques in all their classrooms. Well, the courts have already ruled you can't do that. That has no academic purpose. And yet, in Oklahoma, they actually have their academic standards. They want the students to study the Ten Commandments like they do here in California and its relevance to Western civilization. So I find Christians oftentimes will do these symbolic things rather than the substantive things.
So Christians tend to wave the red flag in front of the bull, maybe?
Yeah, and that's where these atheist groups then go after them. And so what we do in our organization is we do workshops for educators on how to do this legally and appropriately so that you don't get in trouble.
Okay, hang with us, Eric. This is a fascinating discussion. We'll be right back.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. WisdomWorks Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. We're joined with Eric Brewer, who's dispelling this myth. Contrary to popular opinion, schools are allowed and even encouraged to teach the Bible, but it's one of the best-kept secrets in the world. And joining me is Kevin Conover.
Hey, Eric, thanks again for being on the show here. And I had a question for you. How did you get moving in this direction? I know that you were a public school teacher.
Yeah.
How did you begin to, you know, start this ministry, and what kind of got you going, lit your fire here?
Well, I was a high school history teacher, world history teacher, and I was just concerned about what I saw happening in my profession. This would have been back in the 80s. Saw what was happening in my profession, saw what was happening in our country. And it was kind of during the Reagan Revolution. Mm. And I just wanted to begin to say, hey, you know, we don't have to go this direction where we're all pretending we're atheists in the classroom and all. My first step into all of this was to get more in the political foray, and I got involved helping elect conservative school board members and so forth, and did that for about 5 years. But really, my teacher's heart kept saying, you know, we want to help people see a better way. As Chuck Colson used to say, politics is always downstream from culture. What's happening in the culture will eventually affect politics. And so if we want to change the political leadership in schools and school districts and communities, we need to change the thinking of people. And so that's what I have been on a quest to do for the last 20 years, is working with parents, working with teachers, administrators, school board members, helping them understand, hey, the emperor has no clothes. Everybody is saying that you can't do this stuff, but the reality is you can. And I'll often say, you know, if I opened a bank account, I tell teachers this, if I opened a bank account for you and I put $1 million in it, but I never told you it existed, it wouldn't do you any good. And, you know, here today I'm going to give you the key to the bank account. And when you open that up, I've had grown men cry, realizing, yeah, you know, all my years of teaching, I wasn't doing this stuff, and I should have been doing it, and I could have been doing it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel with listening to this. I teach in a private Christian school, but I grew up going to public schools all the time, and there were many teachers there who, you know, kept tiptoeing around, even having a Bible club on campus. And to me, to hear this is just so freeing, and there's so much freedom in that. And I just feel like, gosh, I wish we could just, you know, tell everybody about this and get the word out more quickly.
That's why I so appreciate your having this as a subject for your program, because I think your listeners, many of them are probably, you know, their jaws are dropping as they hear what's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say to somebody who their feeling is, wow, I love what I'm hearing, but I don't know how to move this forward. What do I do?
Well, at the risk of, you know, giving a blatant self-promotion here, if you go to our website,
yeah,
you have a lot of material on this, on how to do this.
Yeah, the more people that can hear about your website, the better. So we can say that over and over again here.
GTBE, Gateways to Better Education.org. And, you know, the thing is, you just teach objectively. When we do workshops for educators, what we point out to them, a good habit to get in, is teaching by attribution. You attribute it to the source. So you'd say, Christians believe, or in the Bible the story is, or Jesus said, that sort of thing, where you're attributing it, as opposed to simply saying, God said do this. No, well, in the Bible, God told people this. So you're attributing it.
Now, Eric, this keeps coming back to my mind, and that is, okay, here's this teacher, and they love everything they're hearing, and they actually begin to put into practice, they visit your website, they put into practice some of these things you're saying, and then they begin to get some parents complaining, or they begin to get somebody above them, their principal or somebody, saying, hey, can you tone it down a bit? We don't really want any controversy here, and we've had a few complaints. And as Christians here, we're trying to be, you know, we're not trying to create conflict, but just naturally sometimes it creates conflict.
Sure.
And so what is this teacher supposed to do who's nervous about rocking the boat? There, and I know lots of Christian teachers with in public schools with very good hearts, but the last thing they want is to rock the boat. I mean, they're just the running away from that.
She can pretend she's teaching from the Quran. They'll let her talk all she wants.
Yeah. But so what would you recommend to that teacher that's kind of just like, I don't want to rock the boat, and I'm just going to stay away from this?
Well, what they need to be able to do is point back to the academic purpose for what they're doing. So, it's really about academic freedom. And I am for professional educators being professional. This is not about inclusion. So often when we talk about religion in the public school or religion in the classroom, it's all about, yes, we want to make everybody feel included. Well, that's a good thing. You want people to feel included, but that's not why you're doing it. You're doing it because it's academic, because it's good education. And I'll give you an example. For instance, again, in the California state standards, in the 11th grade, it says, analyze the similarities and differences between the ideologies of social Darwinism and the social gospel using biographies of William Graham Sumner, a social Darwinist, Billy Sunday, and D.L. Moody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's 11th grade public schools?
11th grade California public schools. So if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to do that as a teacher and I have a handout for the students or some homework assignment, number one, we recommend put that standard right at the bottom of the handout. Just quote it.
Okay, so quote the actual code itself or yeah. The educational standards itself right there on your assignment.
Exactly. So now if somebody's saying, well, why are you doing this? Well, I'm doing it because it's in what my expected to teach from the California Department of Education. If you have a concern with it, take it up with the California Department of Education. Principals just don't want problems. And so if you can help them understand, look, this is about academics. This is not about trying to convert people to Christianity. This is to help them understand this aspect of history. Another example, if you're going to be teaching about early American, the founding fathers. In grade 8, here's a standard. Analyze the philosophy of government expressed in the Declaration of Independence with an emphasis on government as a means of securing individual rights. And then they put in parentheses, for example, key phrases such as, all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. So if I'm, as a teacher, now going to teach about how the founding fathers believed that God was the one who gave us our rights, not the government, not the king, not the queen, so forth, that's not a religious statement. I'm teaching what the founding fathers believed, and I'm conforming and aligning with the California state academic standards.
It is interesting that we're so used to those phrases and people don't take the time to stop and just think about what they actually mean.
So, you know, if a teacher is totally safe if they tie it to the standards and they make it about academic, not devotion.
Okay, we will be right back with Eric Brewer. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Hi, this is Dana Wright here to announce that Bob Siegel has finally entered the 21st century. It had to happen sooner or later. Now, Bob's popular book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... is available in ebook format and can be downloaded to your Kindle or Nook. Whenever Bob speaks, people are eager to purchase this book afterwards. But sometimes parents inform him that their kids will not read anything that they can't put on an e-reader. Well, now that is no longer a problem. So if you want a book that can help everyone in your family offer better answers to good, skeptical questions that people ask about Christianity, go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com for I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel, now available for download as an ebook.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined by Kevin Conover, and our special guest, we're honored to have him, is Eric Brewer. And Eric, I must apologize because I've called you Eric Brewer several times, but it's Eric Brewer. And I wanted to ask you, Eric, so we're talking about the fact that public schools not only are allowed to, but are encouraged to teach from the Bible as part of Western civilization history. Can you give us some cases of people who went ahead and tried to do that and any resistance they might have gotten and how that got worked out?
Well, yes. First of all, I have not heard that recently because the teachers that we teach to do this, they do it in such a way that they don't get that kind of pushback and that kind of objection. But I've got a funny story. A gentleman came to me a few years ago, and he hadn't heard about us. He got our name from Focus on the Family, and he called up. His name is Arnie, and he said, Eric, I'm a sixth grade teacher here in California, and I'm a reading teacher. And so for cultural literacy, oftentimes I'll have the kids read various stories about where we get certain concepts or phrases or symbolism. For instance, you know, if we talk about somebody is a good Samaritan or we have good Samaritan laws, what does that really mean? Why do we say Samaritan? Well, it comes from this story that Jesus told, and he has them read the parable of the good Samaritan. And he says, now I've got a parent who's all over me and says, you can't do that. You can't have a Bible in the public school, and she's going to go get an attorney, and she's gone and talked to the principal, and now he just doesn't want problems, and so I've got to go defend myself to him. He says, in my heart, I know I'm doing the right thing. This is academic, but, you know, help me. What can I say to defend myself? I said, Arnie, California, sixth grade. And I read him those standards about how he's supposed to teach about the life and teachings of Jesus as described in the New Testament. And he said, you know, I think we've got a copy of those standards somewhere here in the school. And he went and got them. He called me back and he said, this is amazing. Not only did I realize I was doing the right thing, but I should have been doing all these other things as well. And so he was able to go to his meeting with the principal and not only defend himself, but now say, here's how I'm going to expand it and actually live up to the very standards that I'm expecting.
And now, did this parent eventually back off? And did the principal support him?
Well, all I heard was that he was teaching it robustly, so it must have solved the problem. In fact, he called me a few months later, and he said, I want to start an after-school Bible reading club, and I want to make it sure that all my I's are dotted and T's are crossed in terms of what we're doing. And so here he is, a middle school teacher, 6th, 7th, and 8th. Well, in the 7th grade, the history social studies standards is that students are to understand the theology of Calvin and Luther and the history of the English Bible. And in the 8th grade, they're supposed to learn how America was founded on Judeo-Christian religious thinking.
Wow.
And so I said, Arnie, what you're doing is giving students an academic understanding of the Bible for what they're going to be learning in their middle school years. And he wrote that up as his mission. And to this day, he still has an after-school Bible reading club that's recognized by the school.
Okay, so here's another question for you, Eric, along these same lines. Okay, so we've got a parent, they're listening right now, and they're thinking, this is fantastic. This is not taught in my kid's elementary or junior high school, and I want to see this change. What would you recommend to that parent who knows that the teachers are not teaching these sorts of things? And we know that in California, it's now mandated by our governor that that they're learning about homosexuality from kindergarten through 12th grade in the public schools. And although not all schools are doing that, it is in our code, the educational code now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the case. And so this parent, though, is thinking, okay, now we know that the Bible needs to be taught. It's actually in the code. How would you suggest that parent go about encouraging that to be taught in the school? And is there any fear there that the teacher that is teaching this is actually going to teach it in a derogatory manner, meaning let's say that teacher is not a Christian, and when they get to the Bible, they start teaching it in a manner that says, you know, this isn't true, and whatever.
The Bible promotes slavery, the Bible promotes racism.
Exactly,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's important that they be objective, and parents can be wonderful couriers of the good news of these standards to their kids' teachers, because oftentimes it is the case that the teachers are not familiar with this. So I'd encourage people, go to our website, gtbe.org/report, and download this. They can then give it to their kids' teachers and say, you know, this is an FYI. You might not be familiar with this. Or you can also go to them and say, hey, you know, I'm excited. My child's in sixth grade this year, and I was looking at the standards, and wow, these are some great. I'm just curious, when are you going to be addressing this part about the life and teachings of Jesus?
Now, would you, I'm just brainstorming here. Would you recommend that? Okay, let's say there's a teacher. The principal says you can't teach this. I don't care what the California code says. Or you have a parent who goes to the teacher and says, hey, when are you going to be covering this in the curriculum? And nicely, lovingly, as a support and with a good attitude. And the teacher says, oh, I don't plan on ever covering that. I just don't have time to cover that in the curriculum. How do you move there? Do you just wait till a new teacher gets hired and then move on, or what do you do?
Well, it is important that we maintain good relationships with our teachers, and we don't. I often say, you know, it's good to be a lamp but not a blowtorch.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to burn up everything in your path.
Yeah,
and we Christians can sometimes be guilty of doing that.
Sure.
And yeah, so it is a matter of, I remind people, look at who God has put in your path this year. He's put your kids' teachers in your path. What does he want you to do to bless them?
Mm.
How can you bless them with the truth? I know we can bless them with encouraging cards and, you know, gift cards and presents and that sort of thing and thank yous, but you can also bless them with the truth. And
yeah.
This truth, you know, you may find a teacher say, thank you, but no thanks. But you'll also find teachers who say, wow, this is like a cup of fresh water in the desert for me. Thank you so much.
Mm.
And to go back to your question about what happens if a teacher addresses it improperly or poorly, I have a story related to that. A mom in Huntington Beach who had gotten our material and her daughter one day came home, middle school, sixth grade, history teacher, was teaching about this section of the life and teachings of Jesus as described in the New Testament. So she was actually addressing it. However, she was addressing it as, you know, the New Testament was written long after the actual events happened. It was really designed to promote this new religion that had gotten started, this sect of Judaism. And Jesus never really called himself God. That was kind of made up after he died and so forth. And so the mom called and said, what do I do? And I said, well, simply email the teacher and point out what the California standards say, that it says you are to teach as described in the New Testament, not your opinion.
Oh, okay.
Did that. Mm. And the teacher, to her credit, said, you know, you are right. I am wrong. She went back and apologized to the student's class and took it out of her lectures because the code says, as described in the New Testament, you know, you're not to give your opinion on it. You're just to teach, here's what the story is, and here's how it connects to literature and history and so forth.
Okay, I have an interesting question. I want to get back to what the issue that Kevin raised regarding homosexuality being taught, because I'm wondering if there isn't a tension that could develop. Our guest is Eric Buer. Said it correctly that time. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us. Sunday services are at 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock every week. Skyline Church, located at 94 and Hamishaw. Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. Bob Siegel and Kevin Conover hosting. Our special guest is Eric Boer. Contrary to popular opinion, we are encouraged to teach the Bible in the public schools. Eric, welcome back to our program. Hello, Eric.
Yes, I'm
okay.
Kevin brought up this thing about how it's now mandated that they teach about homosexuality, but there's another law in California that says no public official is allowed to say anything disparaging about homosexuality. So what happens when somebody says, well, wait, we're being told to teach the Bible, but the Bible has this opinion about homosexuality that's disparaging? It seems like there could be a conflict developing there.
Well, what you would do is you would teach by attribution. You would teach objectively, and here's what the Bible teaches, and here's how people interpret that. Here's what, you know, this person has said. Here's what that person has said. My biggest concern is the chilling effect it will have on students feeling that they can express themselves in the classroom, because it's really about free speech. And will I feel like I'm now being bullied into not expressing what my family's religious beliefs are on this topic? But you know what's interesting also is in that legislation, and I don't have a copy of it here in front of me, but when we took a look at that, one of the things that people just kind of brushed over was it doesn't just talk about homosexuality. It talks about schools should be teaching about the role of various ethnic social groups in California. And it occurred to me that you could, I can't remember the terminology offhand, but within the terminology, that would also cover Catholics, conservative Christians, the evangelicals, Mormons, and their role in California history. Well, you could make the case that they've had a much more significant role in the shaping and formation of,
especially the Catholics with the missions and everything.
Missions, but then look at today. I mean, I've seen a lot of St. Joseph's hospitals, Baptist General Hospitals. You've got outreaches, orphanages, missions, rescue missions. You've also got those churches having a significant impact on leading the state in a vote on the definition of traditional marriage. So are you going to teach that? Do we only teach the role of homosexuality, the homosexual activist role in California history as a march of triumph? Or do we teach it as, this was really a setback, and then here's this other ethnic cultural group, this social group that has come forward and defined marriage? And even though it was defeated by a judge, it was elected or democratically voted on by the people. So is that how you're going to teach it as well? In other words, it's not just legislation about teaching homosexuality. It's also legislation about teaching about other minority groups.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Now, is this just hey, you have the option to teach the Bible, or is this actually the California Code is saying this needs to be taught?
A little bit of both. The California standards, there is no state testing for history. They test on math and science and reading. They don't test on history. So oftentimes, you know, teachers will teach to the test, no one's going to be tested on, did you teach about the teachings of Jesus?
I see. Okay, so there's some leeway there.
Right. However, they do say an educated person in California should know these things. That's why they put language in there like students should read and discuss
So it's strongly encouraged, but not mandated then?
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, is this is this primarily done in social studies classes and history classes, or is this in another class also?
This is all the social studies frameworks, kindergarten through 12th grade. However, you know, we've heard about the Common Core in California.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get into all the politics and so forth about Common Core, what we do is we look for where the Bible and Christianity can be taught, making the case for that, almost like an apologetic sort of approach. In the Common Core standards, the Bible is referenced four times. So in English, the Common Core standards only deal with English language arts and math. And in the English language arts standards, they reference the Bible, and students should be biblically literate four times.
Wow.
So what we're telling English teachers is, hey, look, it's there, and if you're not helping students understand the Bible and its relevance to English literature and American literature and so forth, then you're not teaching to the Common Core. Even if you're a big Common Core advocate, then you should be doing this.
Oh, wow. Okay, and then is there any relationship here as far as the movement around the country? If you look at school choice, you look at what's called release time education. I know there have been recent court cases where public schools are actually giving elective credit to students who are taking very overtly Christian classes, and they're winning the cases at lower level courts and also at the U.S. Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on that? Is there any relationship here between these different things that are happening in education?
Well, Ohio has just approved giving 2 units of credit for students who are involved in release time education. And for those who aren't familiar with it, release time is about 40 states have laws that allow for schools to literally release students during the school day, not after school, during the school day, go off campus, receive religious instruction, and come back on campus and not be counted absent. And now in Ohio, they're giving them credit for doing that as part of their academic development. This is considered a religious accommodation, and it's got a long history, and it's been supported for years. And in California, we have a very robust religious release time program with a number of ministries doing that.
Now, also in relation to this, we're seeing a lot of internet education happening now, a lot of schools moving classes online. And what impact is that going to have, do you think, or what should we be anticipating as Christians concerned about the future of education, public education? What impact is that going to have on teaching the Bible in the public schools and to public school students?
Well, it could go either way. I'm for good education wherever and however it can happen.
Mm.
And, there are public schools that are doing a great job. The fact of whether it's online or in a classroom, the issue is the content and how the content is approached. It can be ignored online as much as it's ignored in the classroom. It can be taught online as much as it's taught in the classroom. California actually has a law, and this is unique. In the research that we've done across the country, I don't recall coming across another state that had this law that protects a teacher when they use the Bible in the public school classroom. So this is not the standard. This is actually a law. And if you went to California legislature's website and looked up Education Code 51511, here's what you would read. Nothing in this code, meaning all these laws, shall be construed to prevent or exclude from the public schools references to religion or references to or the use of religious literature. That would include the Bible, art, music, or other things having a religious significance. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back for one more segment of The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our guest is Eric Boer. I'm also being joined today by Kevin Conover. Eric, I do a lot of teaching at middle schools as a guest during the Christian Club at a lunch hour optional. Now, I know our public schools are aware that they can at least do that. But what's interesting is the first time I went to this particular middle school, I had my Bible with me because I was going to teach on the Bible. And they told me that the woman that actually hosted it and was eager to have me out, she says, oh, make sure you cover that up. Let me put it in my knapsack. You can't show the Bible while you're on campus. That is so diametrically different than what you're telling us today.
Yeah, and it's completely wrong. She's operating under this assumption that somehow the Bible is contraband, that smuggling Bibles behind a closed country or something.
Got a Bible dealer.
Yeah.
Kid, want a Bible?
Yeah.
No, in fact, a teacher who's gone through our training here in Southern California, after the training, one of the things we do is we show them how they can use the Bible in their classroom library. And over half of the teachers these are public school teachers, over half of them who go through our training then say they're going to put a Bible in their classroom library. So she did this, and she said it's the most read book. She's a first grade teacher. She said it's the most read children's book in her classroom.
Wow.
And she called me then several months later, and she said, I've got to give you an update. The kids are so excited about reading the Bible. She teaches in a largely Hispanic community where Catholicism is the predominant religious faith there. The kids are very familiar with the Bible. They love the Bible. And she says they actually are arguing over whose turn it is to read it. So I've asked them, and they said, yes, please buy more Bibles. I now have 4 Bibles in my classroom so that all the kids can share reading them.
Wow, that's so amazing. Boy, you're doing an awesome work, Eric. And, you know, I was thinking what we should do is we need to download this report from your website, gatewaystobettereducation.org, gtbe.org, and then copy this and distribute it to every public school teacher in San Diego County.
Absolutely.
Hey, they'd make great stocking stuffers this Christmas, everybody.
Yeah.
Get the information out there. Yeah, just go to, if you wanted to use the long name, you can. We have that as our domain name, gatewaystobettereducation.org, and then just /report. Or if you did the abbreviations, gtbe.org/report, and it'll take you right to it.
And would you say that the biggest hindrance to, you know, this information getting out there is really just ignorance about the facts here?
It really is. I find there are many teachers who are fine with teaching about America's Judeo-Christian history and the founding of our country and the godly influence there and all those sorts of things. They love to sing Christmas carols like they did when they were kids, but they're afraid because they think that somehow it's all forbidden, like this teacher who said, oh, you've got to cover that Bible when you come on campus. They all assume that you can't do any of this, and the fact of the matter is you can do it all. You're completely free to do it. You could have Christmas carols sung during Christmas. You can bring in nativity scenes. You can talk about the baby Jesus. You can teach the kids what the story's really all about. Again, it's not to seek devotion. It is to recognize something that's happening in our culture and to teach students the academic history of it.
Now, do you ever recommend to people, or have you ever seen a case actually get to the point where a lawsuit actually takes place? I know the Alliance Defending Freedom, will often take cases for free to defend Christians who are, maybe following this through. and feel threatened. Do you ever recommend legal action, or do you try to stay away from that?
Well, it's you could always sue, and sometimes you have to. And you have to kind of, as I often tell teachers, you have to determine what hill you're willing to die on.
Mm.
And some of them are worth dying for. You know, there was a teacher, for instance, in the Midwest who wanted to teach an after-school club, a what they call a good news club.
Yeah.
And the school said, hey, you can do that, just not at our school. Go to the neighboring school so the kids don't, you know, they were concerned about the kids confusing. Is she a club teacher now or is she a classroom teacher? And she said, no, I want to teach in my school. She sued and she won because the court said, look, when their teachers are off contract time, they're private citizens and students can distinguish the difference between somebody who's in the classroom teaching versus at this good news club teaching. So she won. So that was a good hill to say, this is where I'm going to, you know, make my stand. And she won a great freedom for teachers all over the country. So it just depends on what it is you're doing. What I find, unfortunately, is that, like I said, a lot of Christians, because we kind of live in this world within our churches of, hey, we're going to reach our kids for Christ. We got to reach the world for Christ. And so it's all about evangelism.
Mm.
And then they bring that same mentality into their classroom. And that's where they basically shoot themselves in the foot too often.
Christians have never been particularly known for their tact, unfortunately.
Yeah, I call it symbolism over substance. They
yeah. just,
they go for the symbolic things. there was a case here in California where a teacher had big banners all over his classroom proclaiming, you know, in God we trust.
And, yeah, that was right here in Poway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand him wanting to take a stand for his free expression. But the at the end of it all, it created a chilling effect, and it created an overall feeling of, oh, see, you can't express Christian stuff. You can't express that God stuff in the classroom. See, that guy lost his case at the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah.
Well, the fact of the matter is you can do all of that stuff if you do it in the right way.
Yeah, I see, yeah. So it's just not, we don't want to be purposefully confrontational. We want to work with people, love people. We want to live like Christ and focus on the end goal of letting people know the truth, but we don't have to, you know, stand up with a bullhorn and make a scene either.
Yeah, it's a matter of, you know, I'm all for Christians standing their ground as long as you're standing on the right ground.
Yeah, yeah.
So
absolutely. And then, are you optimistic about where education is going as far as, you know, the country is concerned and California is concerned? Do you feel like we're moving in a positive direction in regards to, you know, the Bible and public schools and so forth?
I definitely do. I think, you know, when we first began this, there was even more of a sense that you can't do this stuff in a public school. But I think the Christian community has basically said, we've had enough, we're going to push back. Now, some of their pushback isn't always appropriate and isn't always advantageous, but more and more within the public schools are realizing, no, we don't have to make our schools religion-free zones. And so I feel good about it. I mean, I think it's kind of the parable of the wheat and the tares. There's good things happening, there's bad things happening. But when it comes to academic freedom and religious freedom, I think we're seeing things moving in a positive direction.
Eric, we're down to our last few minutes, so before you suddenly get cut off by the music, I want to give you a chance to tell people a little more about your organization and give out your website one more time.
All right. Thank you. Gateways to Better Education is a ministry to keep God in our public schools, creating a better future. And if you want to know more about it, come to gatewaystobettereducation.org, and you'll learn all about the freedoms that you really have in the public school.
Okay, Eric Boer, what a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for honoring our program.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. It's
Happy
been
to do it.
A fantastic show.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.